When Shane asked me what the sermon was going to be about, I said quite honestly, I had no independent recollection of what I was thinking when I wrote the topic down. And it's a good thing that I didn't give him any hints, because as the sermon progressed from one draft to another, it changed right in the middle. And in a lot of ways, the sermon is encapsulated by the Nellie Bly story and the issues of how we sometimes just feel like accidental tourists being subjected to the whims, the accidents, sometimes tragic and sometimes happy, of life. And sometimes in the middle of it, we can't tell which are the happy accidents and which are the tragic accidents. Time takes time in order to understand things. Where I started was with wonder and the sense of this life being something that couldn't be imagined and foreseen. There are times when I have considerable sympathy with solipsists who believe that they are the only real thing and everybody else is just a figment of their imagination. I'm sure everybody has wondered about the little song, Row, Row, Row Your Boat, Merrily, 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 Life is But a Dream. And the old question, am I a man dreaming I'm a butterfly or a butterfly dreaming that I'm a man? That's an abstract kind of philosophical piece of wonderment. But when I look at the world, it is just so remarkable, so amazing, so complex, that I am moved out of any sense of solipsism because I understand what I don't understand. I understand that when I look at the world, when I look at the scientific part of the world, at DNA, when I look at photosynthesis, when I look from the farthest star to the blood that flows in the vein of my neck, I understand it's just too wild and wonderful and improbable. When I look at, and when I want to think that I'm just dreaming it, I look at the technology and how it evolves beyond my ability to keep pace. And I realize I am not creative enough to have imagined a tenth of my reality. So I better take reality, mine and yours, seriously, even if only as a premise. I have always had an argument with Descartes, with the cogito, I think, therefore I am, because it involves the idea that I can think and I don't need you in order to do that. I believe that we need language in order to think, and the fact that we have language implies the reality of the other. So I think, therefore you are. And whatever my life is, whether it's an electrical impulse on a computer chip in a great cosmic video game in the sky, or it is flesh and blood as I experience it, I need to act as if I'm real and as if you are real and as if we have a relationship and are connected to each other through language and a social contract. Because we create each other in all of the negotiations that we make and all of our exchanges. Our fates are the same in the short term and in the long term. I look at the world and I look at this wild, wonderful, and weird ride of my life and I think, there is nothing I could have imagined when I was young that would have dreamt of my life as I live it today. If you found any of my surviving high school teachers, and it would be remarkable that they could have survived me this long, if you do, nobody in my original cohort, whether teachers or friends, would have imagined me having dedicated 42, 45 years of my life to the study and the examination and writing and speaking and teaching about religion and religious subjects. I was not I believe born that way, raised that way. I was raised across some distance from GLAD, but I was raised to be more or less generic store brand Jewish person. I came from a background where in my bar mitzvah I spoke the words and didn't understand them. Of course, that wasn't so different from a lot of the words I used in high school term papers also, where I wrote the words and didn't understand them. But I was raised with expectations. At the time, I didn't know whether they were high expectations or low expectations, because for every child, whatever they're living is kind of normal. So I understood that the parameters of my life choices would be limited. I was going to be either a doctor or a lawyer. Now, that's not a joke. It is a cliche, but it is also true that I would have ridden the ride that I have ridden was not foreseeable to me. I look at the accidents of how I've developed my life, and I'm going through this because I'm analogizing it to how all of us have developed our lives with those things that were unforeseen, those accidents that happen that change our lives, those turning points that when we look back we go, aha, I remember, I mean, how did I end up at some point working my way through college doing stand-up? I remember the first laugh I ever got and the feeling that obviously I liked when I had reduced my parents to asthmatic, wheezing little lumps of paroxysms in the kitchen from a very unexpected line. I'll share it with you. So I was doing the dishes. I was about 8 years old, and Marilyn Monroe lived down the street from us. And I made some Marilyn Monroe comment, and my mother asked innocently, "So you like blondes, do you?" And 8 years old, pre-sexual, but I knew it was funny. I just said, "I don't know who looks at her hair." And and it changed my life. I look at those other accidents of what I do in the world, at the teaching, at the writing, at the speaking, at religion, and it seems there's no way that I got from my background to where I am today. All of these things have had to happen in order for my life to happen. I first got interested in religion, I thought, when somebody tried to recruit me into rabbinic seminary. And I wasn't very interested in spending 2 years in Cincinnati. Paris may be worth a mass, but at that time, the rabbinate was not worth 2 years in Cincinnati. I developing an interest in counseling. I mean, where did that come from? And as I looked back at all of the accidents, so I ended up going to school in Vienna because my father died when I was 20, and my best friend Tom said, "I'm going to Vienna. Do you want to come?" So I went to Vienna. I studied philosophy and psychotherapy. An accident with my father, an accident with Tom. There I met the man who would become my second best friend, whose ex-wife I would marry, and she would become the Fair Helenkola, my wife of 19 years. Again, my dad had not died, my friend Tom had not asked, everything would have changed. And so I go along this path that seems just filled with accidents. I go into the Peace Corps, to an Arab country, I learn Arabic, I study Islam with the Imam of Nabul, and end up going to divinity school. There's no way any of this stuff happens. And so the point of my sermon was, what an incredible wild ride we're all on. We don't know where we may know where we've been. We don't really know where we're going. There's no way to predict it with all of the accents. So enjoy the ride. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's mysterious. And if there was an allusion to a John Lennon quote, life is what happens when you make other plans. And so just enjoy the ride and time and being and the sunshine. And then I was reading the New York Times this week, and there was a story about Obama's youth, his years in Indonesia. And at the end of the article is a little story where he and two friends were asked what they wanted to be when they grew up and what was the best thing to be. And one said, well, a soldier, and he became a soldier. The other said, a banker, and he became a banker. And Obama said, a president. And why? He said, well, because I can get the soldier to protect me and the banker to build things for me. And so I'm looking back at his life, and if that was a seed of something, so I reexamined my journey. And all of a sudden, all of this inexplicable stuff started to be at least momentarily explicable. Religion. My first interest in life, my first passion was mythology, Greek mythology. While other boys were memorizing batting averages, I was memorizing the Odyssey, the Iliad, and the Aeneid, mostly in English, although I can do part of the Aeneid in Latin. I was interested in religion from the time I was 4 years old, and it became a passion. Counseling. I grew up on a street with four psychoanalysts. I underwent Freudian analysis in the fourth and fifth grade. And by Freudian analysis, I don't mean I'm in the playroom and he's watching me play with blocks. I'm talking about I'm on the couch facing away from the analyst talking about my childhood, which was not very extensive from the time I was in the fourth and the fifth grade. I felt like I kind of had to make up somebody else's childhood in order to keep him interested, but I couldn't tell if he was interested because he was sitting behind me, and no matter what I did, I couldn't make him laugh. It was very frustrating. So how in the world I got into doing that, and the comedy from having broken my parents up with the Marilyn Monroe joke. The writing, my two aunts, Ida and Rose, were authors of multiple books. And my uncle Jake was the first Russian-born full professor of English in the United States at the University of Illinois, at the Urbana campus. And they all wrote books, translated books from French, from German, and from Sanskrit. I start looking back at this stuff, and I'm feeling as predetermined as a Calvinist. I'm thinking, I've made no choices here. Somebody kind of rolled the historic dice of DNA and of family and of environment, and I took it all in, and it made me who I am by the age of 8. But of course, that's not completely true. Neither half of the sermon is completely true. It takes both halves to try to make sense of this wild ride. Yes, we're all products of somebody shaking up the dice of DNA and giving us whatever we are biologically, with intelligence or without, with musical ability or tragically without, with allergies or without, and we are products of the environment, of those things that touch us, that form us. But we are not prisoners. As people used to say of astrology, and I'm not recommending this as a take on astrology, that the stars don't compel, they impel. Our DNA and our environment are in a partnership with each other and with that thing that we call self. That thing that is in dialogue with us, with each other, and with the world. I am not a passive passenger on the sea of time and being. I'm an active passenger that is not in control. I have input, I have ability, I have choices, I have vision, and ultimately I have responsibility. whatever the genetic and the cultural influences are on me, the choices I make, I must act as if, and you must act as if, we are responsible. That's a heavy burden when we take it seriously, because there are a lot of choices to make. Our hymn talked about it. Who is rich and who is poor? What we build, what we don't build. What we care about passionately and what we close our eyes to. I understand when I reject the attractive philosophy of solipsism that the world's pain does not go away when I close my eyes and avert my gaze. That the pain and the pleasure and the celebration go on because I am real and the world is real. While every part of the world that I perceive is by definition inside my head, I know of its reality outside my head. I know of its reality, of your reality, of the reality of the farthest star. I know that while I am on this ride, I am involved in a relationship with time, with being. I am part of a miracle of life and of consciousness, and most importantly, or equally importantly, of conscience. And that what I do and what I choose makes a difference in what happens in the world, and that makes a difference in what happens in me. I know that when I am on this ride, I have a job to be responsible and respectful to the men, the women, the children, and the butterflies.